Welcome to the Women in Public Policy Program Seminar Series podcast at the Harvard Kennedy School.
Good morning, and welcome to the Women in Public Policy Program Seminar Series. I'm Victoria Butson, the Executive Director, and we wanted to welcome you. As many of you know, the Women in Public Policy Program focuses on closing gaps in the areas of economic and political participation, health, and education. Today, it's a particularly special pleasure to welcome back to our seminar series, Johanna Mollstrom, who is returning to Harvard, having done her PhD in economics here, having been very involved with the Women in Public Policy program. Today, she's going to talk with us about gender differences in self and other competition. She's a professor of economics at Humboldt University in Berlin, and the head of competition in the consumer department at the German Institute of Economic Research. Many of you know that we are podcasting, so though we have an intimate group here in the seminar room, we have our downloads of our podcast have taken place more than 30,000 times, so we're very pleased for the ripple that the talk will have both here today and beyond. We ask that you shut off your cell phones, and would you like to take questions during your talk or at the end?
I'm happy to do both.
All right. So questions during the talk or at the end, and we ask that your questions end in a question mark. Thank you very much, and we can't wait to hear your talk.
Thank you so much.
I'm very excited to be back. I spent 6 years in Cambridge. It's been 3 years since I left, and it's great to be back. This is such an important and great place. Okay, gender differences in self and other competition is what I'm going to talk about. This is joint work with Corinna Picella. She's an assistant professor of psychology at UPenn, and with Leif Demirol, she is a graduate student at George Mason, where I was between Harvard and moving back to Europe. So we're building on this extremely established literature that shows that women are less willing than equally able men to compete against other people. And what that means is that if you provide a setting where you can earn a little more if you win in a competition, but less if you lose, women are less likely to choose to enter this type of setting. This is interesting in itself, and it has been replicated hundreds, if not thousands, of times in the lab. And more recently, it has also been shown that this particular finding can help us understand what's going on outside the lab too. So Thomas Buser, for example, is one of my co-authors on other projects, and he's really devoting his career to understanding this, and he has been collecting data where he goes to schools and do these measures, competition, willingness to compete measures in the school, and then follow students over time. And he shows that whatever you do when you decide about whether you want to compete or not, that's really telling a lot about your future career trajectory, what kind of education tracks you're going to choose, etc. So these are not just intriguing findings from the lab, but it's really telling us something important about the world outside the lab too. And then a natural question is, why do we see women being less willing to compete against others? And it turns out that there are two things that are underlying that are probably the most important. So firstly, women are more risk averse, so not as willing to take on a risk or a gamble. And of course, if you compete, you don't know the outcome, so it's a risky thing to do. Women are also less overconfident, less confident / overconfident than men are. And if you think about, should I enter this competition or not, you're thinking about how well can I perform and how well can others perform. And of course, if you're less confident there, it's also more likely that you're going to say, no, I don't want to be part of this competition. So this is just a very brief outline of sort of where this project then comes in. Because all this literature is about competing with other people. And we just started wondering, what happens if we just replace the competition against others with competition against yourself? And what we mean with competing against yourself, in this case, is going to be competing against your own previous score, so improving yourself over time. And I mean, you can imagine this embodies things like I'm running a marathon and I'm running a marathon again and I want to run it faster. So sort of progress, challenging yourself, mastery, self-improvement. And that's an important thing in the labor market and in society in general, the willingness to challenge yourself and improve. So that's an interesting thing in itself to know if is there a gender difference there? Are women, just as women are less willing to compete against others, do we see that also in willingness to challenge yourself in that way over time? But you can also think about concrete institutions, like you could have a bonus program that is not comparing you against others, but it's actually comparing your progress over time and saying, well, if you sell more than you did last year, you get a bonus, or things like that. So we were super curious to see what would happen in terms of the gender difference when we do self-competition instead of other competition. And why not would we then expect any gender differences here? So going back to the risk aversion and the confidence that we know are important factors for the other competition, we could see that both of these have a slightly different role here. So it's risky to compete against yourself too, for sure, because you can't be sure that you're going to win. But one source of risk is removed, namely who you're going to be matched to, because if you compete with yourself, you already know who your match is. So risk aversion may play a different, smaller role. And also confidence. It's a different type of confidence that comes into play. So you still have to think about yourself and assess your own performance and what you believe is your ability to do better. But you don't have to think about other people at all and try to guess how well others are performing. So there are reasons to believe that maybe self-competition could be different. And we'll get back to risk and confidence later on in the talk. But that was sort of our original hypothesis of why self-competition may be different. So I'm going to present you three experiments today that we have already done. We're collecting data for a fourth, and there may be more. But we're trying to understand various aspects of self-competition. So in the first one, as you'll see, it's a very simple lab experiment that just changes a little bit in the original design. And we simply ask, do we see a gender difference in the willingness to self-compete or not? Then we move on and we replicate our results from the first study and also ask, what are the mechanisms? Why did we find whatever we find? And that we do online with a large sample on an online labor market. And then in the third study, we asked, so okay, in these two first studies, people could choose whether to compete or not. But what happens if people are forced to compete? Which type of competition do they prefer? Do they prefer to compete against themselves or against others? Are there gender differences there? We also ask if self-competition can serve as sort of a gateway to other competition. Maybe if you would compete against yourself, you become more willing and prepared to compete against others. So these are the questions we are asking. Are there any questions at this point, or should I just head on to study one? Okay, so in the lab, we use this extremely established design that came from a seminal paper by Muriel Lederle and Lisa Westerlund. And what they do is, so participants do a task, and you have probably heard of this, but I'm going to go over it briefly just to make sure everyone's on board. So the task is to add up sets of 5 two-digit numbers. That's one task. And you do as many of these as you can in 5 minutes, and you cannot use a calculator. The experimenter makes sure that you don't. And you do this task in 3 rounds, that is each 5 minutes. In the first round, you're paid a piece rate. So you're simply paid $1 for every problem you do correctly, and that's it. So you do it for 5 minutes, and then you're told, okay, now we'll do the second round, but now the payment is going to change in the following way. So now we're doing a competition, and now we are in the other treatment. So this is the competition against others that we're comparing our self-competition to. So when you compete here in this treatment, you compete against one randomly selected other participant. Whoever does the best and do the most tasks correctly gets $2 per correctly solved problem, and the other person gets zero. So this is a competition where you have to take part. And then comes the third round, which is the choice. Now you have a choice. Before you do the third round, you can choose. Do I, in this round, want to have the piece rate, $1 per correct answer, or do I want to do a competition? So do I want to get paid $2 per correctly solved problem if I win? And it's again against the same matched person. After this, we ask questions about confidence. Those are incentivized, so it's basically about guessing whether you outperform the other person or not. We ask unincentivized questions measuring risk aversion, and we collect some demographic variables. Yeah?
So no feedback between rounds?
No, exactly. Okay, no feedback between rounds. And also they're told here that they know they're going to do it for three rounds. They know that some things may be different and that they're going to get the information about how each round will work just before that round. So that's how it works. Yeah?
Do they know anything about the randomly selected participant?
Here they don't. So in study two, I'll get back to that because there we manipulate that too a little bit. So here they only, they can look around in the lab. We had about 20 people in the lab. We made sure that we recruited 50-50 men and women. So they looked around and saw approximately the same number of female and men, and they're fellow students. So that's what they know. Okay, so this is the other treatment in the lab, and the only things we change in the self-competition is these red parts. So everything stays exactly the same, instead that when you compete the first time, you compete against your own score in round one, and when you choose whether to compete, you compete against your own score in round two. So that's the only thing that changed. Yeah.
So in that case, you have a bit more information probably around reference points, because I could imagine that I have a pretty good understanding of how many I solved beforehand.
Of course. So that may very well be part of the results we find, and we're going to look at that aspect. So that's the main difference, right, between self and other competition, that you're much better informed about this other person, which is also why confidence is going to play a different role, because you're not going to have to guess how well other people are doing. So that's a key difference.
And well, they know the opponent. I mean, well, they have interactions after the game.
No, this is a typical econ experiment. So they sit in front of their computers and they do everything through the computers and then they leave. So whatever interactions they have, of course they may know each other. They may talk afterwards, but it's not part of the experiment.
That part of the rhythm, maybe a relationship maintenance account, like
yes.
Then they consider other work, other feeling, about their perceived competence versus warmth.
Yes. So many of these things may matter, and there is also research done on some of those aspects. So there are many streams of research in the competitiveness area in general. So totally valid and good research questions, but not what we do here.
Have you considered trying to measure performance doing other tests than math? Because we know that women tend to have under-consider their performance in mathematics. So adding numbers might be already something.
Yes. So that's also a separate research topic, which is also super valid. Turns out that the task does matter. The reason that this task was originally used by Bernuriel and Lisa was that they expected there to be no gender difference in performance. And in most samples, there is indeed no gender difference in performance. However, this task is often perceived as being sort of a male-ish task. And it turns out that if you replace this with a more female-type task, some of these results change. So it matters what the task is. I think this is still a good task to look at, because many of the things that we are interested in outside the lab in terms of why do not women compete for leadership positions have sort of the same type of flavor, right? It may not be that women are worse at being leaders, but it's perceived as sort of a male task. So in that sense, I think it's a kind of a good task to look at, but it's a very valid point. It does matter. You'll also see that in the lab experiment we use this task. In the online experiment, we're going to use a different task, because if you have people sitting at home in front of their computers doing this, they are going to use their calculator. So we can't use this task in the online experiment. So I'll show you which task we use then. But very valid point. Okay, so we did this with C3. That's one of the usual experimental softwares. We did this at George Mason. A little over 200 participants, half of them female, and they got about $17 for 40 minutes. So this is how we did this. So looking at the results from this first one. So looking first at the other competition, just checking. Okay, if we regress the decision of whether or not to compete in round three, so that's the outcome we're interested in. In round three, do you say, yes, I'll compete, or do you say, no, thank you, I want the piece rate? That's the dummy variable that is our dependent variable here. So if we regress this on a coefficient female, and all regressions always control for the first round score, and that means that when we see that this is significant and negative, we do not only say women are less willing than men to compete, we're saying women and men of the same ability are there we see this difference. So women are less willing to compete than equally able men. When we add controls for confidence and risk, this result, the significance goes away, which confirms what I was saying before, that risk aversion, so gender differences in risk aversion and confidence are sort of two of the key drivers behind this result. Yeah?
I'm sorry if you said this. What are your measures of overconfidence and risk?
So I did not say it, so thank you. The risk aversion, here we use a qualitative question. So it's just a self-assessment on a scale from 1 to 10. Are you a person who avoids risks as much as possible, or I have no problem taking risks? That measure in turn is well correlated with some of these more common econ type risk measures where you choose between lotteries and so on. But we only have this qualitative unincentivized measure. And in terms of confidence, we just ask, given that this is just a competition against one other person, either yourself or another matched person, we just asked, do you think you won? Yes. This is going to be important, because that means that we're basically only asking about rank. So we're not here, we're not decomposing how well can I assess my performance and what do I think about others. In the third study, we changed this and asked specifically, how many answers do you think you gave that were correct? How many do you think others gave? And that turns out to be interesting, but we do not do that here. Here it's only rank.
Can I ask one more question? Do you ever interact that with gender? So do overconfidence and risk have different effects for men than they do for women?
They do not have, no, so I think we look for that. They do not have different effects. So this is about women being less willing to take risk, right, and being less confident. We do not see that the effect of it is different.
So when you put it in interaction terms?
No. Good point. So in terms of the other competition, we replicate what so many other people have found, namely that women are less willing than equally able men to compete against others. In the self competition, here we still see the same direction. It's not significant when we control for confidence and risk aversion. Especially risk aversion plays also a role for whether you're willing to compete against yourself or not. But this then basically goes down to close to zero. So here, from just this study, we can say, okay, we replicate the result that women are less willing to compete against others. We do not find evidence for that, but here we can say, well, this could be a power issue. Maybe if we had a bigger sample, maybe we would see a gender difference here too. But we're concluding that, well, it seems that there may be something different going on here. And this is also why we're going to replicate this with a larger sample in the online study. Yep.
Just a quick question on the constant terms here. I don't know if these are logits. I'm not sure about the magnitude. But does everyone opt in much more when you compete against themselves?
No. So you can't. Unfortunately, you can't interpret those, given that we control for the first round score, and so you can't interpret those here.
Did you find any across
people? People do in general compete a little more against themselves. The level is a bit higher, and we'll look specifically at that in some of the other studies. And you're right. I could have shown that here too, but I don't have that. I don't have a slide with that. But that's right. Self-competition seem already here to be a little more popular, maybe. So that was study one. So basically only concluding that, well, self-competition may be different. There may be no gender difference there. So then we said, okay, let's do this also in an online sample, which is also not representative of the population or anything like that. So that's important to be aware of. But it's on MTurk using Qualtrics, so sort of standard setup for doing online experiments. It's a real online labor market. So people get paid for what they do. So it's incentivized payments in the same way as in the lab. And here we do four treatments. So we do other and self, just as before, and we also add two other treatments that comes to this matching of participants. But before I tell you exactly about those, there are two other smaller differences that I should also mention. The rounds were shortened to 90 seconds, so not 5 minutes anymore, but 90 seconds. And this is because the online experiments are almost always shorter, so people are sort of used to them being shorter, so we wanted to make it more of a regular online experiment. And we couldn't use the addition task because people would use their calculator. So we did a CAPTCHA-style task, so a task where you can't be really helped by the computer. So the way this looks like is this. So instead of adding up numbers, which is what they did in the lab, they get a series of these matrices and they count the zeros. So which is also it was good that they did not have to do this for 5 minutes, because it's really boring. And we did these matrices in GIF format, so it should not be easy to like take the cursor and go over it and have the computer help you count it or anything. And we also don't see any people with performance that is a real outlier. So we think that we succeeded in doing a task that they actually did themselves without getting any help from the computer. But let me tell you about these two other treatments. So we did two other versions of the other treatment. So they were matched with one other person. But we manipulated who they're going to be matched to, and we told them this. So this was transparent. And we wanted to basically mimic two things that happen when you compete against yourself. So firstly, when I compete against myself, I'm well aware that I'm a woman. So I'm aware of my own gender. So we wanted to see if we hold that constant. So we had one treatment where we did the other person has the same gender as you. And then, as you were saying, you also have better information about your own ability. You have much better reference point. So we mimicked some of that in the sense that we said, you're going to be matched to an anonymous person, and the only thing you're going to know about this person is that he or she had the same number of correct answers in round one. So sort of holding ability to some extent fixed. Of course, you yourself know more than just how many answers you did in the first one. You also know something about, do I generally get better quickly? So you still have better information about yourself. But we're matching something of that. So that's what we did then in the first online experiment. So, oh yeah, I said a couple of these things already. Amazon M-Chart is what we use to recruit the workers, the participants. We programmed this in Qualtrics. We had almost 1,000 people, again, half of them female, and here they earn much less. So this took about 12 minutes, and they actually only earned 120, which is close, I think, to the average wage. I usually pay wages on MTurk that are higher than the average wage. It turned out that they were worse at doing this task than what we thought. So that's why the payments were, on average, a little lower than what we were actually aiming for. But average earnings were just 120. So what happens here then? So looking again, same type of regressions. Again, the dependent variable here, what we're interested in is do you in round three say yes, thank you, I want to compete, or no, thank you, I stick with the piece rate in the third round. So again, we see when you're competing against others, we again replicate the finding that women are less willing to compete against others. We again see that if we control for confidence and risk, that is no longer significant. So those seem to be two important explanatory factors. But here we get a much clearer result for the self-competition. So here we get a much more precise null. Yeah?
Didn't you say you had 1,000 subjects?
Yeah, but they are only in one treatment. I mean, we divide them into four treatments.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
So
mm-hmm. Everything's between subjects.
That's something. That's an important point. Yes.
Okay.
I should have mentioned that. Okay. So that's what happens. And then here we also here we exclude some people who did not pass a quiz about the. We do a little quiz to see if they get the instructions. Mm-hmm. Here, as you see, this I think this adds up to slightly less. So we kick out some people of the sample who did not pass the quiz. That does not matter for the results, but important points. So in the self-treatment, we get a much more precise null here. So here it really seems to be no gender difference in terms of wanting to compete against yourself. And same thing with confidence and risk, it still matters. And one thing that I can point out already now that's coming in a few slides is that it sort of seems here that this coefficient is larger and more significant than this one. So there may also, we're going to look at this in a different and more correct way, but already here you can sort of think, maybe confidence actually plays a larger role when deciding about competing against others than deciding about whether to compete against yourself. And there's a slight difference also in the magnitude of the risk coefficient here. So these are our results from those first two treatments in the online experiment. And then we also had the one where we matched them with someone of the same gender and someone with the same ability. And when we match them with someone who has the same gender and tell them this, we find a gender difference here in willingness to compete that is basically exactly the same as when we do not do this manipulation. This is a different result than what some other people in the literature find. So some people find that when they do this in the lab and women are surrounded by women only, or are told that they are matched to women become more willing to compete. That is not the case here in our sample. We see no difference here. However, when we match them to someone else who had the same ability in the sense of having the same amount of correct answers in round one, we also do not see a gender difference. So this again tells us or indicates to us that maybe when you have better information and you need to think less about how good this other person is, that is something that helps this gender difference go away. So getting back to what I was, yeah.
So if you go back the slide, I'm curious whether participants are learning a lot in this task. So it seems like in these regressions that only control for first round score, the first round score is almost not at all predictive of whether you compete.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I'm asking is part of it that they're so bad early on that they're very willing to compete mm-hmm. against themselves because they mm-hmm. realize I've gotten a lot better at this, but when it's someone else and you don't know their ability, mm-hmm. you don't make that same inference. Mm-hmm. Like, if I struggled at first, they probably also struggled at
first.
That's
a good question. Would it help if we also include as a control how much they improve between rounds one and rounds two, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
I have no idea for the task
whether there is a lot of learning or
yeah.
not.
So in general, people were a bit worse at this task than we thought. So they do, on average, if I remember correctly, I think between 5 and 6 correct. And it does improve with about 20% between round one and round two on average. We see no difference, I'll get back to that too, we see no difference in how much it improves depending on self and other. So about the 20% improvement, which is basically exactly the same improvement rate as what we see in the lab for the other task.
Okay.
So
learning doesn't seem to be a much bigger factor.
No. Okay, so getting back to what I was saying before about risk aversion and confidence. So again, it's likely to think that, or it's you can hypothesize that these may play a different role. You already know your match, so it's a less risky decision. You don't have to try to assess other people's performance. You can think about your own performance and your own ability to improve. So this may be something that's different. And what we do to test this, in one way we test this, is that we regress the choice, again, whether you compete or not, on risk aversion and confidence, respectively, and we interact that with the treatment. So what this does is that it tells us, when you're in the other treatment, does risk or confidence play a larger role? And what we find in the online sample is that marginally significantly, risk aversion plays a larger role, and for confidence, these results are pretty clear that confidence plays a larger role in that decision. In the lab data, we find it, which is a much smaller sample, of course, we find a marginally significantly larger role for confidence in the other treatment, but no difference for the risk aversion. So this again makes us believe that, okay, the fact that risk aversion and confidence are so important in determining who competes against others, and the fact that these play different roles when you think about self-competition, seems to be important to explain the difference we see here. We also just look at the risk-taking measurement that we have and the confidence measurement, and we see that in both the self-treatment and in the other treatment, both in the lab and online, men are less risk-averse. So they report that I'm a person who's more willing to take risk in general. So they say this both in the lab sample and in the online sample and in both treatments. However, when you look at confidence, we see in the other treatment that men are indeed more confident in terms of saying it's more likely that I won, but we see no such gender difference in the self-treatment. So we also see a sort of baseline difference, yeah?
It'd be interesting here too, right? You actually asked them two different questions in the two treatments for confidence, right? One is how willing are you, or how likely do you think it is you beat the other person?
Mm-hmm.
In the self-treatments, you're asking how likely you think it is they beat themselves,
yeah.
Right? It'd be interesting to see the predictive power of those cross-treatments.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because it's slightly different to say that the same confidence measure has different predictive power across the treatments. This is saying sort of the two different questions have different impacts within the treatments.
Yeah. That's a great point. Thank you. So we conclude that, okay, risk aversion and confidence are important, and we're going to look, we're also, in the study 3, we're going to look more at that, and we're going to decompose confidence. So looking specifically at how well do you think you do and how well do you think others do. Another thing that we wanted to ask is, when we use self-competition instead of other competition, do we sacrifice the performance-boosting properties of competition? Because one reason that you may want to use competitive settings is to motivate people to perform better. And we know that when you compete, you generally put in more effort. You may also be more stressed. So it may not be generally only a good thing, but in terms of performance, it increases performance. So then we asked, what happens in self-competition? And here I'm giving sort of a vague answer. So we don't think, based on these two first studies, we don't think that we sacrifice the performance boosting aspect. That is going to look a little different in the third study. So here, the score improves with about 20% between the first and the second round in both the lab and the online experiment. And there are no significant differences between the self and the other treatment. So no significant differences in terms of how much it improves. On the other hand, the point estimates, even though not significantly different, are such that the performance boosts seem to be larger in the other treatment. So it seems to be maybe a little larger when you compete against others. But here at this point, we don't have none of those results are significant. And also we don't randomize the order between the first piece rate round and the competition round, so we can't distinguish learning from the actual performance boosting. So we will look a little more at this, because we're not still entirely sure. It may be that other competition is better at boosting performance. Yeah? No? Okay. So basically just wrapping up this before I tell you about the third study. So we replicate the gender difference in willingness to compete against others. We don't see this for self-competition. Risk and confidence and the way they impact the decision to compete seem to be key to understanding these two different results. And what we are also saying is that, well, maybe, especially when it's about motivating yourself, maybe self-competition could be a good alternative institution to use when you want to motivate. It's a more gender-neutral way to motivate. Of course, this is not going to work when there are ratchet effects, in the sense that if you know that you're going to be compared against yourself over time, you're probably going to underperform in the first round. So here, of course, we don't tell people, but in general, if you come into work and say, well, we measure your sales this year and your sales next year, and if you sell better next year, then you're going to get this big bonus. That is also going to impact your performance in year one. So it may not always be appropriate. It may not be appropriate to use this when you need to select people. So if you have 10 people and you need to select three, you probably don't want to select the three best with just the best improvement rate. But in some circumstances, for motivation, this may be a valid institution to use. Yeah?
Yeah, so this may be a slightly different question, but I'm wondering what your priority would be if we would have the same kind of experiment, but instead of having private individual gains, we would somehow have collective gains. So if you know that there's another player with whom you would at some point share the gains, and if you can still be self-competing, but you know that you're doing that with someone else.
That's a good question, yeah. I don't know.
Because I think in terms of real life, the way you assess your self-performance, mm-hmm. if you do that very individually, or if you do that for like a bigger goal, yeah. A team, or that might make...
I don't know if anyone has done that, and I don't know what my prior would be. I would have to think about that. There may be someone else in here who knows that this has already been done and know the results, but no. But that's a very good... It's a very good idea. What would your prior be?
Oh, I don't know. That's
no.
Why I'm
no. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So then, let me tell you about study 3, which is the second online experiment. So here we wanted to know So if people can choose directly between these two types of competitions, what do they choose? So here in the previous studies we had, they could choose between the piece rate and the competition, and the competition was either self-competition or other competition. But here we want to see if they can choose between both, which one do people like? We also wanted to see, as I said at the beginning, so if it is the case that there is no gender difference in self-competition, is it maybe the case that women who experience self-competition and kind of not have that much against it, are they also more likely to compete against others? Then we want to decompose confidence to think about I assessing myself, I thinking about others. And then we also asked some causal attribution questions. So we asked some questions about to what extent do you think this result was due to controllable or uncontrollable factors? So we gave them a description saying things can happen because of things you can control, for example, how much effort you put in, or because of things you cannot control, for example, luck or who you're matched to. To what extent do you think the results in these different types of competitions and piece rate were due to controllable or uncontrollable factors? So these are some of the things we're exploring in this study. And here we had, again, four treatments. So let's take them one at a time. So in the first round, now it's four rounds instead of three. It's the same, it's 90 seconds, it's the same matrix task, so everything else remains the same. But here in treatment one, they first see the piece rate, and then they see the self tournament and the other tournament in randomized order. So half of them gets the self tournament first, and the other half gets the other tournament first. And then when they choose in this treatment, they choose between all three options. So they can choose to do the piece rate or the other competition or the self competition. So here we basically want to see, okay, does, when we have both these different types of competition to offer, does that lead people to in general compete more? Or is the competition rate the same? Then in treatment two, we set up round four so that they have to compete, but they can choose if they want to compete against another person or against themselves. And they have experienced both. And then treatment three and four is about this gateway question. So here we have one treatment where they do not experience the self-competition at all. So they do the piece rate two rounds, and then they do the other tournament, other competition, and then they choose between competing against others or staying with the piece rate. But in the treatment three, they do experience the self tournament. So here we then wanna see if you have experienced the self tournament, does that make a difference for whether you choose to compete also against others? So that's how we set up the second study. Again, we did it in Qualtrics, recruited workers on MTurk, 921 subjects. This time we had slightly more females. And we also, they got slightly more earnings, higher earnings, because there was one extra round, so we wanted to give them a little higher show-up fee, because it took 15 minutes, but it's still lower than what I usually pay them. Because again, the task was trickier than we thought. So looking now, so firstly, this is treatment two. So this is when they're forced to compete and they can choose what type of competition they like most or which type of competition they want. So we see that the self tournament is much more popular than the other tournament. And this gets back, I think, to your point, right, with them being more able to assess, have a reference point, and also to your point about them maybe feeling that, oh, I can certainly improve a lot here. So we don't know exactly why people prefer the self tournament rate to the other tournament rate. What is interesting to see is when we look at these questions about how controllable do you think your result is. So unsurprisingly, people say that the self-tournament is a situation where they have much more control. And this may be one reason why they like this, because it's a situation where you feel that you're in control, and that's something that people generally like. So that may be one reason why this is more popular among both women and men. So you can see it seems like it's even the difference is even bigger among women. That difference is not significant. But both among women and men, they definitely like self-competition more. This is treatment one, where they can choose between all three options. And here we see that there are a big chunk, especially women, but also men, many men, who choose the piece rate. But if you sum up how many people compete here, the fact that both types of competition is available leads to more competition in general. So it's something that boosts competition. And the two types of competition here seem to be about equally popular. So what we can guess from comparing treatment one to treatment two is that among those here, more of them when they are forced to compete, they go to the self competition rather than the other competition. And then we're asking, so when you've experienced self-competition, does it change women's propensity to choose other competition? It does not. So women are not more willing to compete against others after having experienced self-competition. Surprisingly to us, and this is something, if we want to understand this, we need to run more studies specifically on this. But what we see here is that having experienced self-competition makes men less likely to compete against others. Yeah?
Can I just make a question? How about, what would be your priority if you would kind of see a distribution of how good other people are, or get some idea of how good people are?
So other people feedback are. About how good other people are or something like that.
Because I'm thinking like one of the things that you might have in this is, right, that I know how good I am, but I don't know how good the other people are.
So we'll get to that a little bit. So we're not doing what you're saying is you could have a treatment where you give some type of information or feedback about how good others are. That may have an effect. We're not going to do a treatment like that, but we're going, so since here we are decomposing confidence in the sense that we are not just asking about rank, but we're asking how many do you think you did correctly and how many do you think others did correctly? And we're going to see, I think it's probably like the next slide or something. It's definitely related to that. But here we don't really have an hypothesis. We did not have an ex ante hypothesis about why we would expect men to be less likely to choose to compete against others after having competed against themselves. It may be associated with how men think about confidence, but at this point we don't know. So if we want to know more about this, we will have to explore it more. So coming to confidence. So here, the way this is measured is basically how many correct tasks do you think you did, and how many divided by how many correct tasks do you think others did. So being above one here means I think I'm likely to win. I think I'm better than either the opponent or myself in the previous round. And what we see is that in the other tournament, we see men being significantly overconfident and women being significantly underconfident. However, in the self-tournament, well, the point estimate is still a little higher for men, but there is no significant gender difference, and we can see that it drops. So men are more sure that they will beat another person than they are sure that they will beat themselves. And for women, it's the other way around. They think that they will lose against another person, but that they will probably be able to improve over time against themselves. And what is interesting here is when you start what is also interesting is when you start decomposing this in where does this come from? Does it come from how you think about your own performance, about others? And it turns out that when they're guessing how well did I do, men and women are equally good at assessing their own performance. But women are more prone to overestimate how well others do. So women think others do a lot better than they actually do, whereas men don't think so. Men think that others do worse than they actually do. And this gets back to sort of what kind of feedback should you give people? And I'm thinking that this may even be relevant in a sort of policy context. So if you wanna encourage girls, should you tell them you're better than you think? Or should you tell them others are not as good as you think? Because those are two different interventions. And here it seems that you should tell them others are not as good as you think. So that may be something to look into too separately. And then getting to the causal attributions and thinking about why did something happen. So what we do here is that we ask them on a scale from 1 to 10, where 1 is this was only due to factors I could control, and 10 is this was only due to factors I could not control. We ask them for each round, why do you think this happened? And this is, of course, unincentivized, et cetera, because we don't know this. We're just asking them for their opinion. And it's also important to note that since this is an online experiment, we do all the data analysis after it's collected. So here, we have not yet told them if they won. So we're just reminding them, after they have taken part in all the rounds, we're reminding them and say, oh, remember round one. In round one, you were paid a piece rate of so and so much for its correct answer. Whatever result you got here, do you think this was due to controllable or uncontrollable factors? And we do that for all the rounds. So in the self tournament, we see no gender difference in the factors that subjects attribute their results to. And unsurprisingly, these are lower numbers than in the other tournament, which means that they attributed more to controllable factors. So they feel that they have more in control, that they are more in control. In the other tournament, however, women think that their result is due more to uncontrollable factors. So they have a higher, and it's even slightly above 5. So they're more on the side of saying this was due more to factors I could not control than to factors I could control. Whereas for men, this is smaller, so men think that they were more in control over the other tournament result. And this becomes especially pronounced if you look at the people who believe that they won. So women who believe that they won fail to take credit for that in the sense that they say, okay, I believe that I won, but it was due to factors I could not control anyway. I was lucky in who I was matched to, or something like that.
I just wondered what the question was that you asked.
So we asked, I think pretty exactly we said, your performance in these and other tasks and certain can be due to things that you can control and influence, such as how much effort you put in, and it can be due to factors that you cannot control, such as luck or who you're matched to, or how hard the task is. Because it's random, right, how many zeros there happen to be in a particular matrix. In this round, to what extent do you believe that your result was due to factors that you could control and factors you could not control? And 1 being defined as it was only due to factors I could control, and 10 being it was only due to factors I could not control. So that it's a pretty abstract question, right? So we were debating back and forth a lot about how we should formulate that, and if we should just talk about luck and effort as sort of specific examples of uncontrollable versus controllable factors. But in the end, we opted for using those words, saying there are things you can control, there are things you cannot control. So what are you thinking? Because I think it may matter, but did you have a specific idea about how it may matter?
I
I'm trying to tease out how this maps to looking at sort of self versus other and other environments. And so then I became interested in like, was there a prime in the question? Is it sort of how men and women perceive looking at it in this area?
Mm.
But I don't have a theory.
No, no, neither have I. And I think, yeah. I think you're right that it matters how you ask the question. And we were here, we were mostly concerned with asking the question in a way that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it's, I mean, it's an abstract way of way of thinking. It's not rocket science, but most people probably don't think like this all the time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So the scale was 1 to 10 or 0 to 10?
1 to 10.
Then the midpoint is 5.5.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So both men and women think. I mean, I don't know that these are different, but I mean, I think.
No, but the you're, I need, but then, yeah, I need to double check. I need to double check if it's. I think it's 1 to 10, but I need to.
Even
I should double.
0 to 10, 5.06 is probably.
No, no, it's not significantly
different. From 5.
No. So, but the gender difference is, is significant. Yeah.
But I think that's interesting, right? Mm-hmm. It's not that women are saying. I mean, I suppose you can make this argument that the normative response should be the midpoint. Because I'm doing half the work, and the other person's doing half the work. I have no control over what they do. I only control what I do.
Yeah.
It's hard to come up with any other sort of normative answer.
And but then, then it's the added uncertainty about how hard this. Okay, but that's held constant for the two people. How hard this particular task? Yeah,
Are they doing exactly the same?
So in the lab, it's so the which two numbers show up and that they're adding is randomized, but it's randomized for the whole. So the first task for everyone will look the same, and the second task will look the same. So they get the same, but they of course do different amounts of them. And in the online, it's definitely the same because they're. I pre-created these GIF files.
Yeah.
So I did them randomly, but they were done before the experiment was run.
Yeah. Like 50-50 seems totally reasonable.
Yeah.
And I probably should preface what I said is right, that because of norms and values in society, men feel that they have more control over their outcomes and self-identify with their victory more than women feel they have control over their outcomes and self-identify.
Yeah, no, it makes sense, but I think it's interesting that we see it in this type of task and circumstance, too.
Yeah. I'm interested in following up on this question of other environments, and particularly environments where women are actively competing very successfully. You know, like the women's Olympic teams and, you know, reality TV, right? That there are lots of places where women are actually competing actively. And so I would really be interested to know whether you can kind of turn the telescope around and look at some of these women and find out whether these things that you're finding about this lab experiment actually apply. In those situations.
That's a great point. And I don't know if this experiment has been done in samples that are already highly competitive. You could say the original experiments were run at Harvard, which you could say is already sort of, those women are probably more used to competing in a sense. And there the gender difference is the same. But I don't know what would happen if you would run this in a sample that is even more explicitly competitive. I know that, so for example, for the gender difference in willingness to take risk, that's something that we almost always find, but someone has done a study on stock market traders, and there they did not find such a gender difference. So there it seems to be a selection into that among women that make them more similar to men. So it may definitely matter, but I don't know more than that. I think first you.
I just have a quick question. Did you incentivize the question on credit? So like, you know, if it was like, as you were saying with the zeros and the stuff, you could, there is kind of a grid.
Yeah, no, we did not. And I don't know if you can say that, because there are other, like, did I get enough sleep last night?
Oh, yes.
I mean, there are so many, and also, when you think about controllable versus uncontrollable factors, things get pretty complicated.
Yeah.
Like, it matters how intelligent you are. And is intelligence something you can control or not? So this is actually something that interests me greatly, especially in my other line of research, which is about preferences for redistribution more in general and not only the gender aspect of it. And there, these locus of control and where you think outcomes come from matters a lot. And there, I'm super interested in knowing what do people think are controllable factors, because that may also vary a lot. So I would not be prepared to say that I have the right answer, and therefore I would not want to incentivize it.
As I was listening to your wonderful presentation, I found myself thinking, how might other factors affect the findings? Like, for instance, if race or age were added into this, would you expect there to be different findings if you knew you were comparing, if you were competing against someone of a different race or different age?
Yeah, so now you were already describing like three different papers one could write. Like, firstly, what is your own race? And secondly, who are you matched to? And do you know that or not? And do you know that the other person knows? So looking at, because we don't do that here, we have some of those questions, so we can put in controls for that. I think that we did it and that it didn't matter here. But I also know that, so in terms of age, this gender difference seemed to be smaller for older participants. So that's a paper. That's a very nice paper on that that looks at that. In terms of race, I'm reminded of a paper I saw presented very recently that looked at student populations at a predominantly black college and a predominantly non-black college in Texas. They document no gender difference at the predominantly black college, but the usual gender difference at the other college. But there again, of course, there are a lot of, these are two different schools. There may be many other reasons for why you choose to go to the, there are other unobservables. So, but that's one indication that race may definitely matter. And there, they did two things at the same time. So participants, of course, know their own gender, but in those studies, they also ran, at the predominantly black college, they ran the study with only black participants, and at the other, the non-black, they ran it with only non-blacks. So they also manipulated who you're matched to. So that's what they find. It's very, they think they just collected the data. And that's the only paper I know of that do that, but this literature is also so big that there may be others who have done this. So it matters. There are many things that matter. It matters, the task matters, the matching matters, the feedback matters, etc. So there are many things where we can see opportunity to improve and to understand more here.
Okay. So one thing I want to tell you before we end this presentation is what we're going to look at now. Because one thing, of course, when you think about self-competition, if you want to use it, is what we were talking about, namely, if you know that you're going to be competitive against yourself, you may underperform in round one. So that may limit to what extent this self-competition can be used. And we were then thinking, well, what about competing with preset goals instead of competing against self or others? So sort of a middle ground. If you calibrate those goals correctly, of course, if they're way too high, no one should compete against the goals. If they're way too low, everyone should. But if you can set them right, you get no ratchet effects, because this does not, even if you know that you're going to compete against the goal in round two, you still get your piece rate in round one, and that doesn't influence the goal. So we're interested in knowing how does goal competition compare to this. So we want to run a study where we look at other competition, self-competition, but also goal competition. And then we also want to, more specifically, do a better job of really randomizing the order so that we can distinguish learning from performance boost,
and see what is the performance boost really of these various types of competition, including then the goal competition. And what can we learn? What can we learn from this? It could be that goal competition could be sort of a great middle ground where you can, where you may get the gender neutrality because you are still not involving others, but you may not have the right thing. But these are things that we wanna collect basically now or soon. So this is what I have. This is just summing up what I've already said many times. Women are less willing to compete against others. We see no such gender difference in the willingness to compete against self. Risk aversion and confidence seem key to understand this. Both genders like self-competition, maybe because it's more controllable, perceived as more controllable. And we believe that there is a lot of room to think about how you can use competitive institutions that may not look just like the standard you are competing against everyone else or a group of others. There may be other ways of doing this that are more gender neutral, but still preserve the performance boosting properties and so on. So that's what I have. Thank you so much. And we have 14 minutes for questions. Yeah?
Thank you so much. That was really interesting. You just mentioned ways to do this that might be more gender neutral. And I'm curious if you, if you thought about what those might be, and if you think that there might be a difference between people who are, say, masculine of center or feminine of center on the spectrum in how they self-report their gender, performance, maybe even at that moment, in the outcomes that you're trying.
That last point is interesting. I got that. So I gave this talk at Virginia Tech on Monday, and I got that comment too. And I hadn't really thought about it before, but it would be interesting to, instead of just reporting someone as male or female, to actually ask about that. My hunch would be that the results would not be that different, because I think that people who self-identify as more feminine would also be the ones who have that same difference in confidence and risk aversion. So I think many things would remain the same, but it would definitely be interesting to look at, and I don't think anyone has done it. And then in terms of what more gender neutral ways one could imagine, well, we are trying to explore some of those. So self-competition instead of competing against others may be one way, or goal competitions, but also giving people a sense that the competition is fair. So saying that you are matched to people who have similar ability to you, interventions like that may also be possible to use. So that's some of the things we're exploring. Yeah?
I'm wondering, because you're very interested, it seems like obviously in the learning aspect of it, and also how much people perceive others are doing, like in terms of performance, and you're doing some of that, and you're showing the difference between men overestimating or underestimating how well others do, and women overestimate. And maybe one thing you could think about to get more at the details of where the change is happening, have you thought about incentivizing those beliefs at each part, like after every round? Because one of the things that I'm wondering about here is, what was interesting is obviously with the guys that they fall down in self-belief if they have done the self-competition and the other, which suggests they have learned something about their own performance and maybe start calibrating other people's performance on that.
Yeah, but as you're saying, it really matters when you ask them, and here that's hard to say, because here we run all the rounds first and then we ask about all the rounds. Yeah. So here that's hard to disentangle.
Right.
No, it would be super interesting to ask also before, describing like you're going to interact in this type of situation. How do you think you will perform? How do you think others will perform? That would be interesting. It would be interesting to do it after each round. And this is then one way we do it. And the reason, of course, that we do it the way we do is that we want to keep the behavior sort of as clean as possible. We don't want to create more noise by having them explicitly think about this until they're done with the last round.
Sure.
But I totally buy that it's going to matter, and that you may very well learn more things from asking at the different points, for sure.
So you looked at the difference between self and other competition. Did you find that the performance, the difference in performance gain mattered in self and other?
No, so we looked at whether the performance boost was different. And the point estimates, it seemed like people may improve a little more under other competition, but it's almost never significant. It's just so persistent that it makes me think that maybe it is slightly better, but the difference is so small here that we would just need a very, very big sample to see it. But just the persistence of, because we have no instance where we see that self-competition actually leads to a higher performance boost. So
it'd be interesting to look at that both on the, because you have forced competition, which it sounds like that's how you're estimating those things, but to look at the selected version of that too, because that's, in terms of selling it, right, even if the force difference isn't as large for self-competition, if you can get more people to compete under self, then you might, on average, get a bigger boost.
Yes, that's a great point, yeah. Let me write that down.
Really nice work and really nice job presenting it. Two questions. One is, I know Muriel and Lise actually did find that women are pretty good predictors of when they should compete, although they're a little bit underconfident, but men are not good predictors. Do you know for men and women, because you have the nice conditions where they can choose piece rate or the two kinds of competition, do you know the accuracy of choice? Are men and women equally? Are they choosing equally appropriately?
Yeah, that's a good. So our online sample actually competes too little, which is different from what you usually find in the lab. And we see the usual patterns but we actually still see men competing too little in the online sample. But it's the same gender difference, but we don't see the over versus under competing. It's an interesting finding. It may have to do with the sample, with the task, with a lot of things. But accuracy, I think women, in that sense, both men and women were competing too little. So men were closer to competing accurately. In the lab, I think we saw the usual with women being competing a little too little and men a little too much, but we did. I remember it not being of at all the same magnitude as what Lisa and Muriel found in the Harvard sample, at least. So there may be clear sample differences there, because George Mason is obviously a very different university from Harvard.
I also found myself wondering, this is not a substantive enough, but you said, you know, we don't do this test because they could use calculators. I really wonder if your gender effect on that addition would go away if everybody had a calculator on their desk.
Totally. You mean in the willingness to compete? Because there's already no, in this sample, there are already no gender differences in how well they do it. But that's, because it should give them maybe more of a sense of control, right?
Exactly, yeah.
But also others have the calculators too. So it depends on how they think about it. I don't know.
It takes the genderedness away from it, right?
I don't know. It's an intriguing question for sure. Thank you so much to everyone.
Thank you so much. We always love having you back in our community.
Thank you.
And we look forward to the next iteration.
Thanks.
I wanted to share that next week, Tavneet Suri, Associate Professor of Applied Economics at MIT, will be joining us to present a talk on the economics of mobile money. So we look forward to seeing you all, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.